A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on July 4, 1993, entitled The Promise and Peril of a New Age Aborning. The scripture readings are Isaiah 65, verses 17 through 25, and Romans 11, verses 25 through 36. The texts for the sermon are Isaiah 65, verses 23 and 25, and Romans 11, verses 32 and 36. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
This is a wonderful and exciting day in which to be alive. And in our fast-moving world, since the Lord's Day is also the anniversary of this nation and our Declaration of Independence, I want to reflect with you for just a little bit about the world in which we live and the movements of history of which we are a part. The tides of history that move back and forth, and sometimes in the midst of our own human experience, we get so overwhelmed with the immediate and the present circumstance, we fail to get that broader picture. At the beginning of this century, after the First World War, the great English poet Yeats wrote that things fall apart. The center cannot hold. The best have no conviction, and the worst are full of passionate intensity. And although that was written decades ago, it could be written as well today from some perspectives. The poets often see more deeply and see farther than most of us. But it is an interesting and fascinating time in which to be alive, for in the broader picture we can see that we stand at the end of a long historical development. This nation was born at the dawn of the modern period. The periodization of history is somewhat arbitrary, I suppose, but most people, most scholars would agree that the 18th century was the dawn. It had some beginnings before that, but the age of the Enlightenment, and in this country, the age of reason, that whole period of the ascendancy of the human, was the context in which this nation was born. The human spirit began to come to flower in the 15th century in the Italian Renaissance. There was a great flowering of art and of sculpture and of architecture. It was like after that long period of medievalism when the church was so dominant and so oppressive, when there was that linkage between throne and altar, that finally, in the 15th century, there was this breaking out, this blossoming of the human spirit. I think perhaps the 16th century, of which we are the children of the Reformation and the Counter-Reformation, the 16th century was perhaps a detour. Maybe for a time, the authoritarian structures of society once again reasserted themselves, but inevitably the human person was going to break out. And our nation was born in that context in history when all forms of authoritarianism were overthrown. There was the assertion of the human spirit. There was the conviction that there was dignity in every human person, and that freedom and liberty were the God-given and God-intended virtues with which the human being and human society was to live. And so, our nation was born at a point of newness. And that's really the first thing that I want to say to you this morning. That in the midst of history, there is development. There is newness. Sometimes we get so depressed by the present, it seems as though things don't go anywhere, and we get all enmeshed and kind of in a situation of no movement, of gridlock, and We throw up our hands and we wonder if there's any hope, if anyone can make any difference, if anybody can change things, if anything, anybody can get things moving again. Well, I want to say to you, yes, 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 in the long run, there is movement. There is development. And this nation was born at a point of newness. There was a new understanding of human government. There was a new understanding of the human person. There was an appreciation for the necessity of liberty and freedom in which the human individual could develop potential, God-given purpose. And there was a recognition that the finest form of human government was the government that governed least, that was a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, in that definition that Lincoln gave to this form of government 100 years later in the crisis of the Civil War. Lincoln really redefined the revolution when he said that this nation was dedicated to the proposition that all people were created equal, and that the test of the Civil War was a test of whether or not this experiment indeed could come to fruition and to realization of that high ideal with which it was initiated in the first place. Well, there is newness. And we were born in a conception of things, in an understanding of reality, an understanding of history, an understanding of the human person that recognized the necessity of freedom, liberty, democracy, for the full flowering of the human person. 200 years plus, we have been blessed. We have lived in this grand tradition, and we have flourished and prospered as no other people. We come into this 20th century. It has been a tumultuous century. Yeats did not overstate the case early on in the century when he said, "Things fall apart. The center cannot hold." There was the First World War, the Second World War, the Cold War. Locked in ideological conflict over all those decades, using all of our resources for armament, escalating the arms race, bringing ourselves to the brink of disaster. And then, 1989, that amazing year. The columnist George Will says that there has not been a year since the 16th century. In fact, he says there has never been such a fascinating, interesting, potentially devastating, consequential year in all of history as the year 1989, when more people and more societies were thrust into the vortex of change than at any time in previous history, even more than in the tumultuous 16th century. The images of our present world tumble through our minds. The Leipzig prayer meetings, the candlelight in the streets, hundreds, thousands of people praying. The Berlin Wall falling, people dancing, singing, hugging each other, celebrating. The removal of that oppressive iron curtain, allowing them to breathe, to be free. And with the disintegrating of that iron curtain and that panoply of oppression, in the midst of our euphoria, we find the sparking of ancient feuds, ethnic cleansing. Our television screens are filled with old women in babushkas weeping over the body of a wounded or dead soldier, son or grandson. People destroying each other. Our world, with all of its promise, yet so filled with peril. The fundamentalisms of the world, Judaism, Islam, Christian. The reactionary, fearful tides that would turn the clock back, that would tear the world apart. Images of terrorism, the World Trade Center smoldering in the aftermath of the bomb. Time magazine a week ago addressing the whole question of terrorism. Arrests in our major cities. Fear. A world that has such technology that small bands of committed people can hold the world hostage. Our day, so full of promise, so full of peril. In Somalia, children starving. In South Africa, less than a year away from a popular vote. Latin America, our cities. In 1989, the walls fell. We sang, we danced. And in the face of that promise, we experience again all of the peril. But there is newness. We were born in newness. A major shift in the understanding of the human person, the nature of human government. And in 1989, a state house planner named Fukuyama wrote an essay entitled The End of History, in which he said that Western liberal democracy has been proven to be the only reasonable, rational government. And it will prevail. It has prevailed. Well, his essay stimulated counter-essays, and there were those who said he's premature and he's far too optimistic. But it was his point that what we've realized in 1989 was already signaled in 1806 when Napoleon's troops moved into the German city of Vienna and overcame the Tsar, the Prussian leader's forces, bringing to fruition the French Revolution's slogan of liberty and equality and fraternity. The French Revolution, the American Revolution, all of that simmering and in ferment for a couple of centuries finally eventuates to where one can look at it and say, the end of history, this is the way it will be. Well, whether you agree with that or not, we are in a period full of ferment, full of promise, and full of peril, which is always the case in the human situation. And let me suggest that not only is there newness in human history, but I believe that we are on the threshold of a new age that holds tremendous promise for those who are not faint-hearted. And that newness must now be not only our national heritage, but must be shared with a global community. It is not simply because I would have you be Christian or altruistic if I appeal to you simply out of your own self-interest, out of our national self-interest. Then I would say that it is time now, on this anniversary of our Declaration of Independence, that we make a declaration of interdependence with the whole global community. Do you realize that the peoples of this entire globe are more closely knit today than the peoples of the 13 colonies on the eastern seaboard in 1776? This is a smaller world. This is a global village. And it is incumbent upon us to commit ourselves to the whole world and the whole human family. We cannot live in narrowly nationalistic purposes, looking out only for America number one. if we were no more than selfish, it is incumbent upon us today to have a world vision. But of course, for us, the people of God, there is no choice. For we are a people of hope, who are fired by a vision, who are shaped by a dream. The marvelous picture of the poet-prophet, who begins with a new creation, a new heaven, and a new earth, because he's dealing with the purposes of the one eternal God, the creator of all. And this God says, "Behold, I create a new heaven and a new earth. I create Jerusalem anew, a joy. I will restore my people, and I will bring my people into a period of peace and justice, such as they have never known. A kind of society where there will not be oppression, where there will not be exploitation, where a person can build a house and live in it, plant a garden and eat the fruit thereof. A society where children will not be raised to calamity, as we see in the screen of our television set as it focuses around the world, the tragedy of children. The prophet's dream was a day when children would not be raised to calamity, where people would live a long life, where they would call and the Lord would hear, where the wolf and the lamb would lie down together and the lion and the ox would eat straw like an ox, where they would not hurt or destroy in all God's holy mountain." That's the biblical vision. And there are those who say, you have to be realistic, you have to be pragmatic, this is the real world, that's a dreamer, that's a poet. I want to say, that dream, that vision, is the only real possibility for a world to be renewed, characterized by justice and peace and the integrity of creation. It is not in the assertion of power. It is not in the maintenance of dominance. It is not in being number one. It is in seeking justice, being committed to peace, and taking care of the environment that holds the only possibility for the human family. And I believe that we may be on the threshold of a new age, of which the present chaos is but the prelude, the disorientation before the new configuration. Because you can look at it all and wish you could turn the clock back. You can look at it all and long for some golden age behind you, but I'll tell you, you can't go home. There is movement in history. There are hinge points. This nation was born in newness. And this nation stands today urgently in need of joining hearts and hands with the peoples of the world in order to find shalom, which is the purpose and the intention of God. Paul struggled with it. He couldn't figure out why his own people were not seeing in Jesus the way. He tried to put it together and figure it out, what in the world was going on. I don't think he was very successful, but he knew that God had an intention for the world that included not only his people, but the nations. He knew that finally, It was the covenant of grace with Abraham that this specially called people would be the blessing of God to all nations. Paul knew that just as all were disobedient, so God intended mercy for all. And therefore, the Christian who lives in the biblical vision is a dreamer. The biblical Christian is one who will leave no stone unturned to bring people together. Hans Kung said, there will be no peace among the nations until there is peace among the religions. And there will be no peace among the religions until we can find peace among the churches. And so we sit and diddle and twiddle our thumbs while the world stands more in danger by religious power than any other power in the world. And we recognize that we cannot speak about the political and the economic and then over here the spiritual. It is all one world. It is one God concerned about the totality of things, about a world in which there is not political oppression, a world in which there is not economic exploitation, and a world in which there is not adversarial relationships among those who are finally the children of one God. Well, the choice is always before us. We can dig in our heels, set our jaw, clench our teeth, and try to resurrect yesterday. Or we can be people of the dream, people of the vision, casting themselves in with a spirit that would move toward newness. For it is possible also here in the pulse of this new day, you may have the grace to look up and out and into your sister's eyes and into your brother's face, your country, and say simply, very simply with hope, good morning. Good morning.